eyes of the world, the eyes of the populations of the world are on you, and we have your numbers.
That lingering sense of please remains, and we'll see what comes next.
We need to make sure that what sits there on a piece of paper is actually going to turn into tangible, actionable projects on the ground that are going to make a difference to people's lives.
Hello, you're listening to Bloomberg Westminster, your daily guide to British politics. I'm Caroline Hepke. Britain and France are trading recriminations over who is to blame for the deaths of at least 27 migrants after their boat capsized in the Channel on Wednesday as they attempted to cross the busiest shipping route in the world in winter weather. Boris Johnson accused France of not doing enough to stop small boats crossing the Channel. France's Interior Minister Gérald Darmanin blamed the attractiveness of Britain's labour market. But both sides have promised to crack down on gangs. Five suspected people smugglers have been arrested. And the Home Secretary, Priti Patel, will deliver a statement in the House of Commons on the issue later. Well, joining me now is Lucy Mort, who is Senior Research Fellow for Migration, Trade and Communities at the Institute for Public Policy Research. Lucy, welcome. Thanks for coming on the programme. We've been talking all year about the jump, the large number of migrants trying to reach the UK. Why are so many people attempting this dangerous crossing, even as we go into the very bitter months of winter?
Yeah, thanks so much, Caroline, for having me on to speak about this. And first of all, I just want to say how deeply saddened we all are to hear of the tragic loss of life in the Channel yesterday. It's people that really feel like they have no choice but to risk their lives to make this dangerous journey across the Channel. Why do people make that journey? And it's because they feel they have no option, quite simply. And, you know, people are moving. People are forced to move. They're being displaced by, you know, awful, awful events and tragedies and war and all kinds of things. You know, we've seen the images coming out this summer of what's been happening in Afghanistan. And so, we're familiar with some of the turmoil that's going on across the world at the minute. And that's why people are moving, and I'm sure the question, you know, is, well, why cross the Channel? Why move from France to the UK? And I think it's just important to kind of reflect there is quite a small number in the grand scheme of things that are doing that. But the reason that people do, you know, make that decision to board those boats is because they see that the better life, the best life that they can have for themselves and for their children is in the UK, and that might be because they've got family ties here. Yeah. It might be because the second language they speak is English, as it's common across the world, and it might be because they've got historic ties, you know, with their country and the UK. So I think, yeah, I just want to reflect some of that in response.
Because actually 25,000 people, it's thought, have arrived in the UK from France, I mean, in small boats. And perhaps boat, frankly, is even a generous term for some of these rafts, crafts and vessels. That's three times as many people as came in 2020. So there is a particularly acute problem now. What is that? I mean, both sides have talked about tackling the people smuggling gangs. Surely that's no easy task.
Absolutely not. It's not an easy task, but I would say that it is a task that's really intimately connected to our government's policies in terms of immigration enforcement and sort of border enforcement. So we have like quite harsh policies, and we're getting more and more restrictive in terms of our borders. And every time we do that, we hand, you know, we hand the sort of initiative to the people smugglers who can open up another route, more costly, and it sort of lines their pockets every time we do that. So, these policies are sort of quote-unquote meant to deter people from coming. They don't deter people, they just push them into a more dangerous route. So I think what we would want to see, what we hope to see, is that this could be a bit of a step change to have a bit more of a kind of rational, mature conversation about what needs to happen. We're seeing ever more harsher policies, and we're seeing, ever increasing deaths. So I think
The spiral is a concern. Lucy, thank you so much for being with me. Lucy Mort is a Senior Research Fellow at the Institute for Public Policy Research. I want to bring in Conservative MP Tobias Elwood, MP for Bournemouth East. Tobias, former Defence Minister and former soldier, want to welcome you. So the French say that Britain is handling this migration crisis badly, that actually it's our labour market that needs reform. What did you make of those comments?
I think we're looking too much at the details. People are attracted to come to Britain and indeed to the continent, you know, for a multitude of reasons. They simply want to get away from war-torn areas. Whether they want to come to Britain or other parts, you know, that is the detail. The point is we have scarred parts of the world, Yemen, Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Libya, places like that. You can now add Ethiopia to the list as well, where families have decided to turn their back on their own country because the insecurity, and make their way to Europe. So we can argue about the numbers either side of the channel. The problem is far, far bigger, and we need to look at the source of the issues. Yes, let's tackle the actual gangs that are exploiting the people wanting to get away. But as climate change impacts as well on countries that where crop failures is going to lead to more migration, huge migration, this is a far bigger challenge, and we need to look at it strategically. But some of the places around the world, which we have abandoned, and the consequence of that is that large numbers are trying to seek a better life elsewhere.
Yes, but Tobias, in that case, you're sort of advocating for a much bigger policing role by the UK and by perhaps others in Europe. I mean, that's incredibly difficult. It's also a massively long-term solution that involves a lot of perhaps money, diplomatic effort, and so on. How do you deal with the issue at hand, which is these small rafts coming across? And why is the government not focused on legitimate ways, opening up channels so that these desperate people can come over, not on a dinghy?
Well, you raise important questions, which the Home Secretary will be seeking to answer this afternoon. There's 250 kilometres of border. It is difficult to patrol in that entirety of the space itself. But ultimately, we do need Britain and France to work more collaboratively in that sense. We've got the Coast Guards, which are unable to cope with this matter. They simply don't have the boats that they require. So on a practical terms, you're absolutely right. There needs to be operationally a far better solution than we've currently got. But I underline the point that this is absolutely nothing compared with where migration and the challenges across channel issues will go in the next decade as well. We need to look at the source of the problem if we're going to stop this eventually.
The relationship between the UK and France has been incredibly difficult post-Brexit. It's a hard point now to try to work on this very difficult issue with France when the relationship post-Brexit has been, you know, has been so battered.
You're absolutely right. It's the tensions, political tensions at a number of levels have not helped matters. Other decisions which could have gone better. The rollout of AUKUS is another example. I met some senior French representatives when I was at a couple of conferences in the Middle East quite recently. It does help to improve the back channels. It does help to make sure that the noise that is made by the senior politicians doesn't undermine efforts to actually work together. We're actually on an intelligence basis, on a military basis and so forth, have very, very strong relationships with France. And we need to make sure that we are not sidetracked, as you say, by the political noise that is sometimes made.
You mentioned that Priti Patel will be making a statement to the House. She has been criticised. There have been newspaper reports, in fact, that government lawyers have said that she cannot implement one of the policies that she has talked about, which is turning around small boats in the channel. So, in fact, you know, she's received a lot of criticism for what was a plank of her strategy.
No, and it begs a wider question of working with the continent on how we deal with the migrant situation, how we have a better system of allowing these people to be fairly shared if they genuinely are asylum seekers, as compared with migrants, economic migrants, who are simply wanting a better life. We shouldn't take away from the fact that France itself takes on as many refugees as Britain does, but many are trying to cross the channel. We're no longer part of the EU, therefore we've absented ourselves from what was the Dublin regulations, where you could actually turn back to the country. There isn't that system in place anymore, and that is a consequence of Brexit. I think something that wasn't made clear when the referendum took place.
Yeah, although there's a difference between sending people back to countries that they may have come from in the EU as opposed to actually in the water when they are in boats. I wonder though, Tobias, if you would, you know, your constituents are obviously on the coast, Bournemouth East. What do you think that they are thinking at the moment? I mean, this is headline grabbing. This is one of the biggest sort of migrant tragedies that the UK has seen in recent years. What do you think your voters, your constituents might think about this?
I think they will want an answer to this. The tragedy that we saw yesterday is absolutely shocking. It really does, you know, bring to mind the dangers that migrants are putting themselves through. And we need a solution. We need not only to work with France, but like I said, it's working with all of Europe. The EU needs to lean into this. But ultimately, until we actually make a better life and improve the security and governance situations in these war-torn countries, there will continue to be a flurry of people, a procession, a caravan of migrants on large numbers that come across into all countries across the Europe, but and including trying to get across to the Channel to the UK because they have connections here or speak English.
Let's get a bit of the other news in the world of politics this morning. There is a striking prevalence of domestic abuse among people referred to the government's programme that aims to divert terrorist attacks. This, according to the police. New analysis of referrals to the Prevent programme in 2019 found that out of around 3,000 people, just over a third had a link to a domestic abuse incident in one form or another. Among those with a link, an Islamist ideology was recorded in 28% of the referrals to Prevent, with an extreme right-wing ideology accounting for some 18%. Meanwhile, findings from the Office for National Statistics have detailed the widespread abuse of women and children in the UK, with almost one in four saying that they have been a victim. And two-thirds of young women in the UK have experienced some form of harassment. About 7% of women had been subjected to domestic abuse in the year through to March 2020 alone, 81 women in all killed in a domestic homicide. And just lastly, English football is at risk of more financial chaos unless money filters down from the Premier League more evenly to the lower tiers. That's according to a fan-led government review, which has urged clubs to come up with a solution by the end of the year or face the issue being taken over by an independent regulator. Now, this report has found that despite the wealth in the Premier League, teams across the English game have fallen into administration 62 times since the top tier was actually founded, and that was in 1992. Now, what do British people make of all the drama and difficulties in politics over recent months, from climate pledges at COP26 to a sleaze scandal and post-Brexit fishing disputes with the EU? Well, Kantar Public's latest Britain Barometer explores UK public opinion. Joining us now is Craig Watkins, who is the CEO of Kantar Public. Craig, welcome back to the programme. Thanks for being with me. I mean, firstly, what is the opinion on MPs on the job of government at the moment?
So it's really quite stark. We asked people to what they thought about how what drove MPs' decisions, and it was overwhelming in terms of 7 in 10 people coming back to us saying that they think that MPs make decisions based to a large extent or some extent upon what will further their career. Mm. And when we asked about financial interests, a similar amount, 7 in 10 saying that MPs make decisions to a large extent on that will benefit their own financial interests. And only a third of people thinking that they make decisions based upon what would be beneficial to the public. So fairly clear that the majority of people have concerns and scepticism about what is driving MPs' decision making.
Yeah, really not a lot of trust. I mean, is that something that is consistent and sort of historically, or is this something that was perhaps made worse by those few weeks of really kind of bad headlines when it came to sleaze allegations?
So I suspect we'd not asked the question before. We'd asked it kind of, you know, based upon the fact that obviously it was of interest. I think it's fair, you know, it would be interesting to track this. Certainly, what we're kind of seeing as well is a greater mistrust amongst older age groups than younger people, and broadly across the political spectrum. So there isn't an awful lot of difference between what kind of politics somebody has, which suggests that it's kind of it's a kind of a widely held view.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, these are our elected representatives. People need to be able to trust that they are making decisions based on the right basis. So yes, definitely a job to be done around regaining trust.
And given that some of this is around the Owen Paterson findings, and the government trying to block the suspension of this MP and former cabinet minister after he was found guilty of lobbying, then there was a lot of question marks around second jobs. What exactly MPs were doing, how they were earning money outside of their normal jobs. What is the view on second jobs?
So on second jobs, over half of people think that MPs should not be allowed to have them. One in four think that they should be allowed to. And again, we see older age groups, kind of very, very firmly of that view. If I look at, say, kind of people 55 and upwards, it's over 65%. Less for younger age groups, it's more about a third. But again, there's still one in two people not thinking that MPs should have second jobs, which we can link to the fact that does that drive inappropriate decision making.
There's been discussion about whether the UK would trigger Article 16 over the dispute around Northern Ireland and trade with Northern Ireland, and the fact that Northern Ireland's got one foot in the EU and sort of one foot in the UK in trading terms, at least. What do voters think about this? Because this could cause a trade war, and it could also be breaking a kind of fundamental agreement that the UK's made.
There's no real consensus. So we have nearly a third of people thinking that the government should carry on with the current arrangement. We have then, nearly a third of people thinking that we should change the current arrangement, and a large proportion of 40% who don't know. So, which, you know, may suggest that they don't feel informed enough about the detail to give a view, and it is a complicated subject, it's not surprising that we see Conservative voters being more in favour of changing the current arrangement, but still less than 50%. So I think what we take from this is it's a critical issue, obviously, for the government, but we have a response from the people that we've spoken to about kind of fairly, kind of balanced across whether we should, we shouldn't, I don't know. And so there's no real
uncertainty.
Consensus.
Yeah, uncertainty about Northern Ireland. Yes, well, it is perhaps a tricky trade topic. What about something that is perhaps closer to voters' hearts? I mean, it's increasingly being picked as the number one concern, which is climate change. How did we do at COP26 in the eyes of Britons?
So in the eyes of Britain, half of people think it wasn't a successful or at all successful at agreeing a deal that could have been that would successfully tackle climate change. There was, less than a third of people think that it achieved what it set out to do. Interestingly, it was, again, and we've seen this before when we've talked about climate change, older generations, older age groups being much more concerned in this regard, far more critical of the outcome of COP26. Half of people to think that it didn't go far enough. An increasing number of people, nearly 60%, saying that global cooperation is poor. And interestingly, post COP26 an increase in people, so nearly 65% of people now, then they'd be willing to make a lot of change in their lifestyles to tackle climate change. So we're seeing that, what seems a greater awareness of the potential impacts. But yes, not a successful outcome for the majority of people.
That is interesting, isn't it? Perhaps consumers are clocking on to, you know, changing your vehicle, changing your boiler, insulating your home. That comes with a price tag, you know. The government's not going to subsidise it all. Speaking of which, kind of kitchen sink economics here, how are voters thinking about their bills? We've just had bulb collapse. This is the seventh biggest energy provider in the UK. Inflation's going up. How do voters feel about this chilly winter for their purchasing power?
It certainly, you certainly get a sense of that kind of chilliness coming through, I think, in terms of how worried people are. We have increasing numbers of people, so 3 in 10 people now saying that they're behind with their bills. And, you know, that's the highest number we've recorded over the past few months as we've been asking this question. We are an increasing number of people, 4 in 10, saying that they're finding it harder to meet living costs, and a similar amount who have seen their household income fall. So a real kind of a shift in terms of the difficulty that people are seeing in terms of managing their finances, and 6 in 10 people saying that they're concerned about their heating over the winter, which is that's a stark figure for for a country such as ourselves. The 6 in 10 people are really worried about their energy bills.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, perhaps, you know, with the price cap having gone up only weeks ago. And so attitudes towards the pandemic then also, because that still lurks for the winter months. How worried are we? I mean, Europe's going into more lockdowns.
Again, we see greater concerns. You know, nearly 3/4 of people are now fairly or very concerned about further waves of COVID-19. Unsurprisingly, we see that most with the older generations, but younger people, you know, one in two of younger people, very concerned as well. So there's an increased concern. You know, we've heard stories about how under pressure the NHS is. We've seen what's happening abroad. A hardening attitude to mandatory vaccines. So now 1 in 2 people thinking that it should be compulsory. You know, that's quite provocative as a policy.
That's a real 50-50 divide, isn't it? Vaccines. Yeah. Okay.
A concern about how much emphasis is placed on protecting the economy as opposed to protecting health.
Bloomberg Westminster. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.